I think I'll go, but call me back if you want to get back to me.
Okay, take care.
All right.
And that was activist Scott Graham, who actually is spending less time at city council these days. I did see him peek through the window during the discussions at city council on Tuesday. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. If you want to get any thoughts in, you better hustle on down and do so pretty quickly. We don't have a lot of time now for all that wonderful tape I was going to play. This is what always happens to me, of course. I run out of time. But I think that on Sunday we're going to have a considerable backlog of tape to play. I've also promised to give you some of the highlights, or at least some interesting speeches from Sacramento. Some good flyers are down at the Downtown for All table, and you can also get them on the net if you give me an email at rnorse@hotmail.com. Jim Ross, who you heard speaking earlier on the air in a recorded interview, has a good flyer called "An Old Timer Smells the Nutty Downtown Laws." I'll read you just a paragraph. "I've been homeless several times, though only briefly each time in my 72 years of life in America, mostly in those times when having uprooted myself or having been uprooted and jobless and placeless meant that I, to those critically observant, was a, quote, bum, a, quote, tramp, a, quote, lost soul, a, quote, hippie, i.e. an entity entitled by dress, by unkempt appearance, by smell, by momentary lack of approved and acceptable direction to not even a second glass of water, to chase down a paid-for slice of pie and cup of coffee, say, in a Times Square, USA coffee shop. But I always bounced back, mainly because the times were different. There was work if one was willing, no matter how menial it felt. However, as the man sang in the 60s, the times, they are a-changin'. Well, they've changed, and how? There is very little work to be had in Santa Cruz unless the struggle to survive daily and nightly with no roof, no job, and very little support, if any, from a well-off community can be considered work. And that job don't pay, or at least if it does pay minimum wage, the rent lords are waiting with their tongues hanging out to skin you, dead or alive." And if you want to get more, hear more of this flyer, check out the Jackson's Shoes protest tomorrow at 2. There's probably going to be a table down there. I know I'll be there doing some flyering. I and John Teelking both wrote separately to the Alarm newspaper. That's coming out tomorrow, I believe. They come out every Friday. In those black boxes, we dissect the downtown ordinances or express our concerns about them. I won't bother to read you the letter because I've already kind of talked about the letter. There is this petition that is circulating downtown. There was an earlier petition that talked about bring back the benches, set up a plaza, stop enforcing laws and harassing people where there's no need to do so. Some good stuff. And we got numerous signatures for that, but that was perhaps a little too constructive for the city council, and the 80 to 100 signatures that were turned in for that weren't even mentioned, except sort of as a complete passing comment by the clerk, who didn't even mention how many people had signed that petition, though the signatures of the merchant petition were itemized in terms of at least mention how many numbers were sent in. So, there's not a lot of time to go into a lot of detail here. Interesting articles on the internet. "Amid prosperity, Toronto shows signs of fraying, June 14th, an older one. A shanty town is swelling on the shores of Lake Ontario, practically in the shadow of Canada's richest banks. The 80 residents have squatted on 5 acres of undeveloped land that is soaking in mercury and lead. Dogs rummage through garbage. Outhouses donated by charities have a stench. There is no running water, save for a single hose shared by everyone, and no electricity. In the winter, people warm themselves over wood stoves. The first baby born in the shantytown last month was taken away by government authorities because the parents used drugs and lived in a shack. I don't have a clue how people could live like this in Canada, said a 21-year-old resident named Michael, who gave only his first name, but he himself recently moved into Tent City after losing his welding job. Rents are just too high in Toronto, he said. Toronto, Canada's premier city for business and finance, is still considered a model. Like other cities across Canada, it generally managed to escape the urban blight that afflicted industrial cities in the United States in recent decades. But signs of fraying are becoming evident here. Even though Canada's economy is strong, property values are rising, and housing construction is booming for the rich and upper middle class. The poor have been left behind in an otherwise bustling housing market. City officials estimate that 6,000 people are now homeless in Toronto, double the number of a decade ago. Panhandlers have also become more plentiful outside Toronto's fashionable stores and hotels. Less than 1% of Toronto's low-income housing units stand vacant, and apartment rents have risen 35% in 5 years. That's not very much, actually. Compared with our local scene, the number of units that can be rented for $455 a month or less has decreased by nearly two-thirds since 1998, city of housing officials say. At the same time, welfare payments fell by 21% since 1996 because the Ontario provincial government was running deficits and cut spending on things like housing, welfare, and transport for austerity. An influx of immigrants, a relaxing of rent controls, and a slashing of federal and provincial public housing budgets all account for the shortage of low-cost housing, while Toronto's chief administrative officer, Shirley Hoy, says we've got to fix this because the number of people swelling into the streets is growing. The solution will not come easy. The city built almost 24,500 units of public housing from 1984 to 1996, which is probably 24,000 more than the United States, or any city in the United States, certainly, but fewer than 100 units in the next 5 years. The waiting list is long and growing. In shelters, the number of beds is up sixfold in 3 years to 4,100, and occupancy is 95%. With 106,000 households in Toronto now spending more than 50% of their incomes on rent, families are doubling up in single-family homes or forced to choose between buying food and or medicine or paying the rent. There is a joke that in Toronto is like New York, except it is run by the Swiss. The subways are squeaky clean. Public parks are safe into the night. But the emergence of tent city and growing homelessness suggests that the quality of life in Toronto, as in many other Canadian cities, is beginning to fray under financial and demographic strain. Cuts in federal and provincial funding over the last 10 years have left Toronto and other cities increasingly reliant on property and business taxes to finance critical services at a time when large companies and the wealthy have been migrating to the suburbs. Toronto, with a population of 2.5 million, suffers in particular because it must have a balanced budget according to provincial law and does not have the right to issue its own bonds. The federal government is encouraging immigration to spur population growth, and that means Toronto and other cities must take on new responsibilities for education, childcare, health, and housing services, sometimes in multiple languages. The signs of stress are growing. With the city 10 years behind its plans to repair roads and bridges, potholes are more common. The grass is growing higher before it is cut in the parks. There is more litter on the streets. And here's a phone call. I didn't even finish this article.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Jeremy over at the Sentinel, the local newspaper.
Oh, hi, Jeremy.
Hi, we're going to be dropping off the paper for the next 10 weeks on a promotion for you to
try
out.
You're calling Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you're live on the air. You want to say anything while you're on the air?
Yeah, what's up, Santa Cruz? Calling from Las Vegas. Enjoy your day.
Well, you've got to get some other fish rag than the Sentinel, but I wish you luck in Las Vegas.
All right, have a good day.
All right.
Wow. Las Vegas is another story entirely. That's another place where they've been harassing homeless people, and homeless people have been fighting back. And the ACLU, unlike in Santa Cruz, has been helping them. That's another really sad thing. Not only have social service providers and religious figures not been involved in fighting these downtown ordinances, one doesn't hear a peep out of the ACLU. So, ACLU, where are you? Bob Tarrant, where are you? Isabel Gilman, where are you?
Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Here's Judith.
Got a little music for you. Hey, listen.
And I think we had that caller before, and we really don't have time because we are at 8 o'clock, which is our deadline for talking and for speaking and for broadcasting. Again, I want to remind you that the Copwatch meeting is going to be happening at 8:30 in about half an hour at Loudoun Nelson Park, in case you want to check that out, and they can certainly use your help. And I think that that's one of them worthy causes that people don't just need to contribute to, they need to put in some energy into, and I hope that you do. I was going to read you the petition for Downtown for Everyone. It's a pretty simple petition, and actually Uncle Dennis is due to come in any moment. When he does, of course, I'll be zipping out the door. Dialogue, not decree, petition to restore a downtown for everyone. The proposed laws criminalizing leaning, sitting, hacky-sacking, leaving an unattended backpack, holding up a spare change sign, etc., do not address real antisocial behavior problems downtown, such as vandalism, assault, harassment, shoplifting, etc. The original idea of an extended public community discussion of these problems, as proposed by the City Council's Riley Porter Committee, needs to be honored. The committee and the community need more time, several months at least. We commend the Riley Porter Committee for initiating a community discussion. We also commend the committee for bringing to light the very real complaints of police harassment, for dropping a cigarette butt, displaying artwork or music for donation, sitting on a planter, and so forth. We ask City Council to postpone discussion of the proposed restrictions on poor and homeless people downtown until October. We ask that the Citizens Police Review Board hold public hearings in August to consider the complaints against police department enforcement policies, to consider helpful suggestions to address the perceived crackdown. You do not need to be a registered voter or resident to sign this petition. And I suggest you check this out, which you can do tomorrow at the protest. And if you can't get to the protest, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You should get a long message there, which is typically about 4 or 5 days out of date at the very least, but you'll probably get some useful numbers there, and I recommend you do that. Thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm doing the painful transition process as Uncle Dennis sets you up to check out some music from the Cream to the Dregs. I think that's about to happen. So you can actually, if you want, we got the best of the Cream coming on. I guess the Dregs will happen later, eh?